Radio Chelly Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
April 6, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Anyway, Thursday, and it is the second to last broadcast day of the week for the network. Generally speaking, it's been an odd one this week for sure, but then again, isn't the world just a strange place to be in lately? Anyhow, Mike Swanson is with me, and we're going to do a shortened pod this week. Next week, I'll have Larry Hancock back with me, and we are definitely not covering the JFK assassination next week. Matter of fact, We just, you know what, I'll just give it to you now. We're going to cover some of Larry's very serious work on UAPs. If you don't know what that is, then you're not up with the current nomenclature, because that is for UFOs. But Larry will join us next week about that. And indeed, there is some academic work regarding UFOs that Larry is involved in. Not, you know, sci-fi or nothing. Serious. Anyways, Mike Swanson is with me. WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. It's more than just Wall Street over there. You can get informed about a whole lot of stuff. I love the morning emails I get from Mike, which you can go over there and sign up for. And also, he's the author of a couple of books. Hey, you look on the sidebar of O'Chelly.com, you definitely see the war state, and you should see Why the Vietnam War. Although, you know, somebody told me that the picture disappeared for Why the Vietnam War on my site. I gotta find that out. I'll figure that out. I'll find out. But they're there. Anyway, that's the first in a volume, in a proposed set of three. Mike is writing about that particular conflict. But the war state, I've recommended since long before Mike was even a regular guest on this show. Thought it was a great book, and still do. One of the things that I often recommend to people. Anyways, Mike, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good. It's great to talk to you again, and your audience of listeners are all great people and knowledgeable people about these topics that those books are about.
And you must have gotten some emails recently, huh? Because anytime somebody says like the audience over there is knowledgeable, it almost always means people reached out and contacted you recently. And I hope that's true, because did you go on any other shows and talk about that JFK article since you were on here last week?
No, I didn't, but it has gotten around the JFK assassination. I haven't been on any other shows about it, okay. But it's gotten around the JFK assassination community. There's a Morley's, you know, looked at it, and Rex Bradford, and obviously, Larry Hancock, we talked about it with him last week, and there's a thread about it in this JFK assassination forum. I'm not participating in it, but I'll just look at it.
Right. Know? Well, look, it's some interesting, it's some interesting information you developed, and definitely we're going to talk about it in the second segment here today. But I was just curious if you had, because somebody else should have invited you on by now to talk about this, but then again, you know, it always gets weird. I mean, I know Morley's off on his own kick, and he's, you know, he is who he is, and he definitely was highly active during the Watergate anniversary, right? Which, by the way, there's a lot of media coming out, and has been a lot of media coming out the past couple of years regarding the Watergate anniversary, right?
Well, I'll just tell you I'm just transparent about it.
Sure.
But like with Morley, he's got a real excellent Substack. Mm-hmm. He's turned JFK Facts into a Substack, and it's got a lot of content. He's sending something out almost every single day.
Yes.
And I will say, he did talk about it on that. He did a podcast with, what's the attorney of the, involved the Mary Farrell lawsuits?
Bill Simpich or the other one?
The other guy.
Yeah, that would be Larry Schnapp.
Yeah, that's right. And they did do a podcast to which they discussed the article. Now, I haven't been on Doug Campbell's or Rob Clark's show talking about it. I likely will. The Black Op Radio, I don't know. I know someone forwarded it to Len, but he may be mad at me because I was on, Doug Campbell and Rob have had a beat. They've had them and Oceanic have like had some sort of
disagreements. Little, yeah, there's always little
disagreements
going on.
Of each other. And I was on a show with them and they were, I didn't say anything, but they were,
well, look,
saying things that would make them upset.
It's so
make,
funny.
Upset.
Listen,
I wasn't saying anything, but I was just sitting there, listening to this.
Okay, I got you. I'm laughing because, look, for several years in like JFK land, there's almost these weird little sub arguments that have occurred, like much like authors have argued with each other, right? Now, because Len was the only podcaster who was devoted to JFK stuff all the time, right? And when he was, there was nobody to argue with. But now that, Doug and, Rob, do their thing, right? They do the quick hits. I think Doug still does the Dallas Action, right?
Rob, yeah, he does.
And Rob still does the Lone Gunman. So between that and the increase in content that came from, Brett Holland, who had been doing it for quite a while, he doesn't just do that, but Brett Holland and what I do, there's sometimes some tension between the podcasters who will take a lot of time and focus it on the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah. Well, on one hand, I do think each podcast helps grow the whole community.
We're all very, very different. I know that personally, yeah. Like Rob and I are cool. I'm sure of that. But outside of that, I'm not sure about anything else. I'll just say it. I think Doug doesn't like me. I don't know why. I think Len resents me a little because for a while I was doing live JFK stuff on Thursdays when he would release his podcast on Thursdays. I think he was a little mad at me. But I could be wrong about all that because Len's been on my network since and he's been a guest on my show. But Doug doesn't talk to me at all. I don't know. I just don't know. And you know what? Brett Holland doesn't seem to have a problem with me. Every time I've encountered him, he's totally polite. Everything's cool. So I don't know. I just don't know. But I think sometimes people just, they have their squabbles. What are you going to say? Look, let's move away from all that. Cause if I want to get into the podcast world and squabbles, I mean, yeah. Mike, you want to sit here with me for the next 3 hours? We could talk all about it. I can tell you, who got called a racist and who freaked out about it and who is actually a racist. And who's actually in it for the money and is getting paid way too much. And we don't know why they're getting that much and who's broke. And
well, I would say that none of these people we've mentioned or you mentioned fit in any of those categories. So.
Oh, no. All the JFK guys are look, we're all individuals, but nobody's like evil. See, that's the funny thing is like nobody's like claiming anybody's like an evil shill in the JFK arena of podcasting. But when you go into other politics or parapolitics, all of a sudden, you're like helping out the conspiracy by not covering stuff. You're afraid to mention this group of people or that group of people, and you won't speak out about Israel. And speaking of Israel, that was in the news today. Anyway, we'll get there in a sec.
Israel?
Oh man, you don't know. Anyway,
no. See, I haven't been able. I've been real busy this afternoon. Wasn't around the computer or TV. What happened
I know,
now?
I know. I was just throwing it out there for the audience. I already knew this. I'm sorry, but. There were apparently a bunch of rockets that were fired from Lebanon into Israel. Iron Dome stopped a lot of them. And the Israelis have begun retaliating and have actually struck on Gaza. And this is serious rocket fire. Largest barrages of rocket fires in many years being directed at and being directed from the nation state of Israel, according to the IDF. And that would be the Israeli Defense Forces. Who are the key reporters, but there is video out online, and people were covering this a few hours ago pretty heavily in the U.S., but now, of course, the focus has shifted. And that is always a problem.
Well, just last week, there were hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating about against Netanyahu.
Well, right. And that was still going on because of the, the reforms that would seem to benefit Netanyahu there in the legislature and in the judicial part of the government, right? Because he was most recently, before being placed back in power, up on corruption charges, corruption indictments. Fascinating how that goes. But anyway, you know what? I don't claim to know all of what's going on in Israel. I'm just saying it was in the headlines. But there were other things going on today that knocked it out of the headlines. And no, it's not the Trumposphere. Although you're familiar with that story from earlier in the week and way before last week, I'm sure, the indictment of the former president, right?
Yeah, I haven't read it in detail, or
don't worry.
The headlines, and I get a little bit of the gist of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the story itself, or what the accusations are, really doesn't seem.
Yeah.
It's nothing new.
Here's the sad part. Exactly. You don't need to read up on it because you probably already know it. Look, you remember who Stormy Daniels is, right?
Oh yeah, sure. She was one of Trump's friends at one time. She's nice.
Right. The porn actress that he allegedly, paid off hush money to.
Well, she did pornography also, but she seems nice.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not saying she's a bad person. I'm just saying that she's a porn actress. I mean, that's what she did for a living. She says it proudly. That's her. She allegedly was paid off by Trump. Right? Michael Cohen was involved in this. He went to prison for it.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, yeah, she was paid off by Trump to keep her silence during the selection process, right? So that it wouldn't come out. Well, anyway, because of the way that he filed his taxes and wrote it down as a business expense, allegedly, he's now up for 34 charges. And that's all it is, really, is just that. That ridiculous payment, which, again, Michael Cohen went to prison for. For a little while, Michael Cohen is an attorney who was like his fixer for a little bit there, and then he turned on.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so now Michael Cohen's already done his time. He's done. But this is all that this indictment is about. And it does seem rather silly, pointless, and, if anything, the truth is, it's pointless, Mike. Let me finish this part of it. You know why it's pointless? It's going to do nothing but strengthen him. He's not going to be prosecuted. That's a fevered fantasy of somebody who really hates the guy and just for the sake of hating him. Guess what? I'm not one of those people. This is flat stupid. This is bad legal strategy. This is bad political game. This is horrible. All they have done is embolden him and strengthen him. And the truth is that over the course of a week, tracking every single day, he was raising a minimum of $1 million a day just off of the indictment. Before even it was shown out there in public, right? So we didn't even have the unsealed indictment. We didn't know the charges yet. He was already raising money with the new witch hunt merchandise, brand new t-shirts with a phony up mugshot made out, hey, save America, protect Trump, right? These t-shirts, all this stuff. I kept saying online, look, where's my mugshot mug and my mugshot shot glass? Cause I guarantee they could market those too. They haven't that I've seen yet. I mean, I don't know. I didn't check today's email from the 2024 Trump campaign, but all they're doing is raising money on this. Okay.
Sure.
And the people that want to support him, you've just really galvanized them even more. See, the deep state's after him and they're going after him for dumb stuff. So you've hardened their position. Anybody that wants to attack him now looks like an idiot because this stuff's not going to stand up. I mean, 100 things this guy did blatantly in public that you really should have tried to charge him with, and this is what they show up with first? This is garbage. So whatever. That's all there is to that. But they didn't announce it for the week. During that week when they just, it had leaked out to the press that he would be indicted. Remember, he was supposed to be arrested the 1 week. He said he was going to be arrested the 1 week. And then another week goes by before he actually went, surrendered, and was arraigned, right? So
was that this week? Arraignment?
The arraignment was this week, right, on Tuesday.
Okay, yeah.
So, but that's what I'm saying. There's nothing new for you to learn here, Mike. All it is that, yeah, he was arraigned on Tuesday. There's your new fact. There's 34 charges. There's another new fact. Everything else you already know. It's nonsense.
Well, what one reason I wasn't really paying that much attention to this is honestly, I don't think it changes anything. I was starting to feel already that Trump was going to get this Republican nomination, because as it stands now, you know, I never thought Nikki Haley was a serious candidate. I just think she wants to be vice president. And then DeSantis of Florida.
Yep.
He just doesn't seem like he was going to catch on. He just looks like a state regional person. And I don't know outside of that if he really has a big national profile following. The problem with him.
Well, see, that means you don't watch Fox News then, because Fox News for a little bit was touting DeSantis, and some other outlets were touting DeSantis as the heir apparent, you know, for the GOP nomination. This wasn't just, you know, the liberal talking head sitting there looking at the opposition. It did appear as though, and in polls, he was showing pretty high, but guess what? As soon as the indictments looked a little more realistic.
Well, he was fading already in the polls before the indictment.
Yes, but the drastic drop occurred as soon as.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just saying I didn't think he was going to get it before the indictment.
Right.
And now the odds of him getting it have decreased even more. But he just looks like a guy. I don't really trust him. I don't believe he believes in these things. I just think he's throwing red meat.
Yeah, I don't know. He's taking a lot of action in his own state, though, Mike. You got to give him that. He is taking a lot of action in his own state.
But I just think he's doing it for the polls and try to build a following by doing these things. You know, banning different books and
he's solidifying
Disney World.
Oh, yeah, right. Fighting with Disney, attacking all kinds of woke culture. I mean, he is definitely.
Look, where I live, the governor. Yeah. I mean, not to that extent, but look, where I live, they turned down industrial development deal with, I think it was General Motors, and it would have been close to 5,000 jobs, but the governor of Virginia turned it down, saying that the company. It was a joint venture with General Motors and some Chinese company.
Yep.
And he said that the Chinese company was linked to the Communist Party, and this would jeopardize the security of the whole country.
Right, right. Or Youngkin, right?
Not just where I mean, this is too.
Is it Youngkin is your guy, or is there?
Youngkin. I mean, okay. This plant is just 10 miles from where I live. It's like 3 miles from my mom's house, and now. He's going to Taiwan and Japan to try to show that he's tough on the Chinese menace, as they call it.
Right, but he's going to go
it that. They just call it the CCP all the time, over and over again.
Well, right, and he's going to stand with Taiwan against China, right? And maybe, you know, seek to make deal. Yeah, I got you. Look, this is another form of grandstanding, and I think maybe your governor has some designs on getting a higher up federal job somewhere. You know, maybe he wants to be a cabinet member, Youngkin, or something. I don't think he has serious. I mean, can you imagine President Youngkin? Something doesn't sound right.
Here's the thing.
It was like Dukakis. Like, the name alone wasn't going to get him there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like Hubert Humphrey. Yeah. Hubert Humphrey tried to run. He wanted to be president very badly.
Yes.
And he ran in 1960 in the Democrat primary, and Kennedy beat him.
Right.
And he actually concluded from that experience that he couldn't get elected as president. But when Johnson got in office, he consciously decided to be the vice president, because if Johnson died or something happened, then he would be in the White. Then he would be president. He thought that was really his best chance ever. So that could be what all these guys think. They're like, well, like Nikki Haley and maybe this Youngkin guy. They're like, well, I don't think I can really win and be president. But if I'm vice president, you know, the dice roll. Trump is an elderly man too, just like Biden, and they might one of the, you know. How things happen, they could just fall.
Right, the Truman effect. The Truman effect, where you figure, look, I can get in, you know, as a VP, and then and then I can roll in, you know, at least I can squeak in under if they don't give me a good enough opponent the next time out. I can squeak in. Yeah, I know, I can see that. That makes sense. But, I mean, Youngkin, I don't think so. I really just don't think so based on his name recognition alone. So what else is going on? I'll tell you. I'll just give you a couple of quick other things, and then we'll probably go to a break and get back around to the JFK stuff. But we're not going to talk about the podcasters again. And for the record, I have absolutely no problem with anybody who does a JFK podcast.
I
enjoy it and appreciate it, actually. But, you know, I'm told some people might have problems with me. But that's their problem. Anyway, it is what it is.
I listen to all of the others when I can.
So do I. Know? So do I. When I get a chance, I do. I don't listen as often as I used to be honest with you, but it's just because I don't want to be influenced by anybody about the stuff that I cover or analyze. Anyways, Clarence Thomas is kind of getting a little bit of heat. ProPublica article came out. Now, this isn't something illegal, but, you know, apparently he's traveling on some lavish trips for the past 20 years with a GOP mega donor, Harlan Crow, a Texas GOP mega donor. Okay, and, yeah, about 20 years, according to a ProPublica article. What is it? Justin Elliott wrote it.
Now, I saw that article right before. I was busy today, but I saw that right before I left my house.
Right. It was early this morning, I think it came out, right?
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, that's the thing. Now, is it illegal? Does it look kind of bad? Is it a bad optic? Yeah, it's a pretty bad optic. But you want to talk about bad optics. You know what's going on in Tennessee, right?
No, what's happening there?
Oh, man, the State House. There were three members of the Tennessee State House who decided to put on a protest and did it in a disorderly way, according to the House rules, regarding the gun violence that occurred there in Memphis recently, right? So, and they're Democrats, and they are decidedly in the minority in the Tennessee State House. So the Republicans put resolutions together to expel all three Democratic members who had, in an improper way, done a protest regarding the gun violence because they wanted some action to be taken by the Tennessee State House, and the Tennessee House of Representatives there did not want to take any action, or at least the Republican controllers of the House did not wish to take any sort of action. So they decided to protest. Anyhow, what comes up next? Now, look, I'm not on the side of the anti-gun protesters, but interesting thing happened here. They put it to a vote and put resolutions together, and just before we went to air, as I was trying to get ready and I was slightly delayed going to air, guess what? They expelled two out of three of the three House members that protested out of order. Now, what did they do? They had a bullhorn at one point after their microphone was shut off. They were chanting or shouting and disrupting the Tennessee House of Representatives, okay? Anyway, why did I say bad optics at the beginning of this? Turns out that they expelled the two black members and kept the white one. And that's already being pointed out by the pundits, I think. Because that's what happened. Now, the white lady representative there that was not expelled was only saved by one vote not to expel her. And the reason, apparently, for that one vote not coming over and knocking her out of the box is not because she had enough Democrats on her side, because the Republicans could easily outvote the Democrats in the Tennessee State House, but it's because she didn't use the bullhorn. And the other two did, I guess, and they all stood together there, disruptive together. But I think it's a pretty messed up optic when now here's a coincidence in the state of Tennessee. The majority of Democrats, or should I say, an overwhelming majority of black people are Democratic, an overwhelming majority of white people are Republican. Something like 83% or something like that in Tennessee, and all that. Interesting demographics there, but they ejected the two black people and let the white lady stay. Now, I'm sure she's not going to be long-lived, and there will be some sort of measures taken in court at some point to see if you can get somebody reinstated, et cetera, et cetera. But that's how it ends up as of today. They've ejected two out of three, and it just so happened that it was the black guys, I believe, that were ejected, and all of them Democrats, again. But the white lady got to stay, and I'm just saying, it's not a good look, even if that's not the reason for it. It just doesn't look good, Mike. And by the way, I vaguely remember during these statements regarding your governor there in Virginia that there was some odd stuff there where people were claiming there were some racial undertones to some of the stuff he was saying, but it wasn't blatant, it wasn't up front. Meanwhile, let's see, in Trumplandia, what else is going on? Well, not much. We're still awaiting, and everybody is, you know, awaiting with bated breath if they're looking for him to get prosecuted to see what happens in Fulton County, Georgia, because that's another pending indictment. But this New York thing is a complete joke. I can't say it enough. Anyway.
Well, the Georgia thing could be more serious, I'd say. Anything would be, I mean, really.
Well, but that's the thing, is, I think a parking ticket is a little more serious than this other thing. Besides, here's the other problem, right, is that, you know, there's going to be comparisons here to Clinton. There's going to be comparisons here to John Edwards. John Edwards, because there was supposed to be payment made or something like that, you know, and it was meant to influence the election. His lawyers are already out there making some interesting cases. I guess the third thing to bring up, too, is that documents issue, which is a very dicey and almost impossible to explain to anybody issue as far as how this really works and everything else. And again, I don't think it's going to change anybody's mind, no matter what it is these people dump out into the public, present in court, or anything else. So all I'm seeing is that he's been bolstered. He's been reinforced here. And what has happened over the past 10 days? A lot more media coverage of Trump. And while he's been reinstated on various social media platforms. And, right?
Well, so, I may have a slight difference of opinion with you. I don't think... When I said I don't think it changes anything, I also believe that as things stand now, things can change in a year. They can change in 6 months.
Hey, change in a week.
As things stand now, if Biden and Trump, you know, if there was a vote today, I think Biden would win. I don't believe Trump would win in a general election.
Well, I stand by what I said to you last time you and I talked in public, okay? Which is, a dollar, he gets the GOP nomination, and another dollar, he is the president selected in 2024. Those two things I stand by. I think he's got it, and I think this just made it easier. I think both things are a lock at this point in time. It might not look like it. There might be some back and forth. You got to have some drama. Look, if every time you decide...
Well, I think that outside of the base he's got, I don't think this news actually helps Trump.
You don't think so? You don't think so? And look, in general American parlance, forget about the parties, forget about the mental illness of, I don't care, it's a Republican, I'm going to just excuse everything. I don't care, it's a Democrat, I'm just going to attack him. I don't care,
it's a Democrat. I just think it's more the same.
It is.
It's just the same thing.
It is, but you and I are thinking, look, forget about all that. In just general American culture, tell me something, Mike, don't we like the outlaw a bit? Don't we like the guy who bucked the system? Don't we like the guy who, I mean, just in general American public, forget about party affiliation, religion, any of that nonsense, forget it. Don't we like the outlaw? I mean, whole industries have been based on telling us all about the Western and Southern outlaws.
I just think it's played out.
You think it's played out? But look, it's back to having him in the news cycle. He's rising up in the polls. It should be played out and dumb and dead already, right? So nobody's going to take to the streets because they're not going to be extreme. But when it comes down to it, look, this is getting ridiculous. We already know that there are corrupt this and that and the third thing in our political system. We know that people are corrupt in the justice system. We know. So you know what? The corrupt system is coming after him. Maybe, just maybe, after a little while, you say to yourself, you know, if they're coming after him this bad, why? why would they dedicate all this time? You know what? Maybe I should be on his side because maybe he's actually doing something if the system in and of itself seems to be attacking him. I'm not saying it's the right equation. I'm just saying it's one that a lot of people are going to do the math on. And I think it's going to be very commonplace. So I think that people that didn't support him before might even begin to drift over, especially as fatigue sets in on all of this. Because it's going to be like, this is ridiculous already. All the money.
Well, I think more likely is
how much money
less people vote in the next election.
Maybe so. But that makes it even more likely that he's selected because his hardcore base will stay with him. If you can create apathy, that's a win for him. If you can create, you know, more people gravitating toward him because he's an outlaw, that is working for him. So I think, yeah, reduce the amount of votes altogether and solidify his position as the guy bucking the system. And that's the other thing, that some people are going to start to get angry when they realize, I mean, how much money do you think it's going to cost to prosecute this situation with Trump, right? 34 counts. You got to spend a lot of time. You got to pay a lot of people. You're going to have to pay accountants. You're going to have to pay people, document examiners. You're going to have to pay, you know, experts on this and that and the third thing. Somebody's going to have to dig up travel logs. Somebody's going to have to, you know, bring Michael Cohen in probably to make a short statement, although I wouldn't put him on the stand. Put somebody else on. They're going to have 18 different ways to show that, you know, and all of it's going to cost money. If this doesn't cost $12 million at least to prosecute him, then I don't know how it costs a penny with the way they spend money on these prosecutions. These other things that are even more complex, even worse. Especially if they've got to start answering weird assertions and they got to pay people extra money, extra time to deal with all of the motions of resistance that his attorneys are going to make. $12 million might be a low ball budget for prosecuting him on this stupid, stupid Stormy Daniels thing, which is really all it is. I mean, I know, oh, you know, it's false entries or business or blah, 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 blah. You know, ridiculous. I'm telling you, it's going to be a colossal waste of money, colossal waste of time. But what it will do is put him on TV 24/7 again. Every time the news cycle dies from one of these indictments, another one's going to pop up. Every time a new scandal, you know, has
faded. Well, that's a show that's going to bore people to death.
Eventually, but you only got to keep it going for the next year. I mean,
that's a long time. I'm not watching it.
Look, I'm not saying that I'm going to watch it with any sort of, you know, alacrity here. I'm not going to watch it with any enthusiasm, but going to have to keep an eye on it because I really do believe. You're looking at this guy's presidency being constructed from ground level. This is what's going to happen. And the more he can say that I'm being persecuted, the more he can put out his, you know, his merch, the more he can get his supporters to still support him, I think you're looking at it doesn't take a full-on majority, really. All he's got to do is convince that base to stick with him and grow it just a little bit, and he's got it. That's it. And, well, and you know what? He could also unify it with an additional like a vice president add-on. If he gets the right vice presidential add-on, because you know Mike Pence ain't going back on that ticket, it's a win. It's a win. I'm telling you. Anyway, I'm sorry, Mike. I stick by it, but now I've talked over the time where I wanted to break. I think I should take the break now, and then we'll switch gears unless you got something you really want to drop in on this. I'll let you go.
Sure.
Are you good to go?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Stick around, guys. I'll be right back with Mike Swanson, and we're going to switch gears and get away from Trump because I'm already sick of talking about him, and I haven't even talked about him this week. Here we go. 2024 on the way. But not today. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com.
Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
GoChili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Well, it's about goddamn time they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jolden Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. For more pods with Jolden and Chuck, search Ocelli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Ocelli on Ocelli.com. Thanks for listening.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I put some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
But I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War, by author Mike Swanson.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
What are the dynamics of a crowd? How do you move a mob? How do you excite them? How do you make them feel as one with you?
I don't know how.
Join them first.
Join them?
Yes. When you speak to them as if you were a member of the mob. Speak to them in their language, on their level. Make their hate your hate. If they are poor, talk to them of poverty. If they are afraid, talk to them of...
The Ocelli.com Radio Network. Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1960. 61. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never before published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
You're listening to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect here tonight on a Thor's Day, and I've got Michael Swanson with me. Now, I took a slightly longer break there, but that's because Buster was barking and stuff. But anyway, we're back. And if you're hearing the podcast, you're like, I didn't hear a dog bark. It happened during the break. Anyways, Mike, look, we kind of went through the news blast. Unless there's some other stuff that you want to cover, I don't know, man. Look, it's a weird time. We could discuss the amping up, what Xi met with Putin not long ago. Of course, the war in Ukraine is still happening. God help us all. There's lots of stuff happening in Congress that is, you know, yawn. Of course, that's going to go on. What can you do? There's plenty of news, but if you want to move away from that and go back to the subject that we talked about last week, which was the missing tapes, if you will. I don't have that article in front of me, but I'll link it in tonight's show notes again, because Mike wrote an article about stuff that is missing from the recordings there at the Johnson Library, but just seemingly in the record in general, immediately after the assassination in 1963. So, you know, that's something that's going on. I guess there's been a little more time for it to soak in with people, the reaction, the article, and maybe you've continued to look at this issue some more. So where are you at with it?
Well, there's one little tidbit I noticed. I'll tell you in a second. But people, you know, they're real supportive and like the article. Now, one thing about it, when I say these tapes are missing, what I'm referring to in the article is LBJ had a calendar which recorded, it listed, you know, different meetings he had in his phone conversations that he had with people. And I looked at that and I compared it first with a book of transcripts of purported all the transcripts of the conversations put out by the UVA Miller Center. Mm-hmm. And I'm very familiar with that. I own the book. And I've read it before, and I immediately noticed that there were phone conversations listed in this calendar that aren't in that book. So that made me suspicious. Then I went and looked at the LBJ library, and the tapes don't exist
right
for these phone conversations. And one of them happens right after that there's a famous conversation on the day after the assassination. It's the first one in this book of transcripts. With Hoover, in which, in LBJ, in which, you know, about the assassination, LBJ asked in this transcript if any shots were fired at him. We don't have, the recording of this, just the transcript, but, in it, Hoover says that there's a Oswald at the, Cuban embassy that, their FBI agents have determined, looking at tapes, isn't the Oswald that did the assassination. Mm. So now, that's
yeah. I got a quick question about this though.
Yeah,
because isn't that the second time that LBJ asks allegedly over the phone to Hoover? Because I know famously some years ago, and I know I used to have tapes of this too. I used to have recordings of it where he asked Hoover, you know, were any of those shots fired at me? And Hoover says, no, no.
That's the same conversation as this one.
It's the same conversation. Well, where is that tape? Because Nightline had it years ago. Remember Ted?
No, I don't think there is an audio of that. It's just the transcript. That's the one that Rex Bradford, you know, had a lot of communications with the LBJ library about. Never was really explained what happened. It's just they said it was.
Well, I'm going to
kind of admit it that it was taped over.
Listen, unless it's a Mandela effect thing, I could have swore that I heard this. Now, it could be that I'm mixing it up in my head and I might have read it somewhere and not heard it, but I remember they made a big deal out of it, maybe around the, what, the 30th or the 40th anniversary. They made a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's no actual audio of this. It could be that you saw, you know, words transcribed on the TV.
And I could have saw words transcribed, and it could have been that somebody reenacted it, I guess, but...
Yeah, that could be what happened.
But I'm going to go look back at that, because I could have swore Nightline had an audio. I bet you anything it's up on YouTube. But anyway, so during that conversation, though, I know I've quoted this conversation even, and I could have swore I heard it. But this is what memory does sometimes, you know? People make mistakes. I'm very sure that you've gone back over stuff and realized that you had a false assumption about something.
Oh, all the time. I had to double check all this stuff because a lot of the article, you know, it looks like it took a lot of research
right.
to write this article I did, but most of it already was in my memory and I was just going back and double checking.
But you're confirming it to make sure that you're saying, look, there is a tape of this or isn't a tape of that. Yeah, I know. You have to. When you do these things, even if you've already studied it, see, that's the problem.
And then you discover something new. Like, right. what, to me, the which no one seems to care, no one's really mentioned this, like the reactions people I had but to this article. But frankly, to me, one of the more that I didn't realize, that we talked about it last week, mm-hmm. is that Eisenhower spent 2 hours with Johnson, and LBJ's description is that he got Eisenhower's help on how to deal with all this mm-hmm. and save the country. That's the phrase he uses. It really looks like he was talking with Eisenhower about the events of November 22nd and this Oswald thing, because the information about Oswald visiting these embassies in Mexico came from the CIA. What I noticed and didn't know before was that during this meeting that Eisenhower and LBJ had, the CIA director came in and gave an update about all that. But the missing stuff was after that Hoover conversation. LBJ had a conversation with McGeorge Bundy that there's no recording for.
Right.
There's no account of.
Right.
And then there are – so one of the reactions, and I believe their argument – because they know, but Rex Bradford said that the LBJ's recording system for these phone calls, that he had the ability to turn it off and on. Mm. So it wasn't like automated. So he therefore could easily just have decided
not to record
not to record some of these conversations, which I haven't made this response to that. Yeah, I'll just tell you one thought about that is that's interesting. That makes the first call of Hoover, the fact that it does appear to have been erased,
right.
Even more interesting that it was erased. Then he responds by, you know, not recording some of the other conversations, like he learned from that.
Mm. Well, you do know, you do know that the LBJ Library actually has something on YouTube that purports to be that conversation from the 25th of November. Is that the conversation you're talking about, or are you talking about the one on the 24th?
I'm talking about the 23rd.
Oh, on the 23rd when he first gets back. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, no problem, because I remember there was an odd one that went that took place like on the 20. I think this is the one from the 25th. It might be the one I'm mixing up that I heard. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I have to go back and look at that. Maybe you're right. Maybe he asked him again, running the shots at me, you know, a couple days later.
That's what I'm thinking.
I'm forgetting it. That very well. I could be forgetting that.
Yeah. No, but you're focused on the 23rd and the 24th, then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No problem.
But the 24th, there's a conversation. There is another conversation on the 20th. There's a missing. I don't have the article in front of me, but I put this in there. There is two conversations that are missing with others, but they had. There's an account of them in Death of a President, the William Manchester book. Right. So even though the conversations don't exist in audio or transcription, somehow William Manchester, you know, got information about what they were. He must have,
right?
Maybe there's a summary of it, or he talked to the other people on the phone or something. But there's a conversation, the first one of the day, that according to the calendar is over an hour long, which is a tremendous amount of time to be on the phone,
right,
with somebody. It's not someone. It's not a conversation where you're just getting information, you know. It's decision making and real discussion going on with McGeorge Bundy, and that's missing, and there's no account of it anywhere that I could find.
Right.
And I looked at the Manchester book. It's not mentioned there. I don't believe it's mentioned anywhere. Someone would have mentioned it. But I also looked at the Robert Caro did a book a couple years ago,
right?
About LBJ coming into the White House, and I read it and I got a copy of it. So I looked at that, couldn't find it in there. But I did notice something interesting in that when I was looking. This is a little tidbit, but you know, there's a famous story of LBJ having to talk Earl Warren into getting on the Warren Commission.
Right.
And to do it, famously, Warren told him, you know, it's basically potential nuclear war at risk.
Right.
And you got to do it for the good of the country. And and Warren left the meeting crying. Well,
right.
When I was looking at the Robert Caro book, he had in there, I never had read this before, but he quoted Earl Warren's description of that meeting, and curiously, he says before he met with Johnson, he met with McGeorge Bundy first. He says McGeorge Bundy was waiting for me
right
at the White House before I met, and then he takes him to LBJ. So he doesn't describe what that encounter with McGeorge Bundy was like or how long it was. But, you know, I'm speculating. But what if McGeorge Bundy briefed him first? Yeah.
Right. And that puts McGeorge Bundy in a different light, considering he's one of Kennedy's guys, right? I mean, he's part of the Irish Mafia and all that. You know, they described him as such, right? The New England Mafia, Irish Mafia, whatever it was they were calling him, that were like his guys that were around him, and he continues on with LBJ. But it's interesting that he's the guy prepping him or priming him to go in for this meeting where Johnson ultimately, according to all the accounts, you know, says to him, hey, look, you know, you got to defend your country. You got to put your uniform back on, you know, Judge Warren, Justice Warren. And, you know, and do the right thing for the country again and settle this, right? I mean, that was the big issue. I mean, that's the legendary story, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's an interesting point. And what I might do is, because I'm going to let you go shortly here, you know, we're about out of time for what I told you I'd have you on for tonight. But I might just go to a quick break and then see if I can figure out what's going on with this LBJ phone call from the 25th. just to play it for people, and maybe that's what I'm transposing in my mind as the 24th. I'll be, you know, you listen to hours and hours and hours of stuff. It's very easy to mix up one day next, and you know, especially we're talking about the same guy. I had a couple of governors mixed up. You know, when Kennedy was talking to different Southern governors, I had a couple of those mixed up at one point. I had to double check myself on that one time for something I was working on. You know, you remember the famous interactions with the different Southern governors. You know, at a certain point, they had to send in the National Guard, you know, and all that kind of stuff. That happened in more than one place. So, like, I had a couple of those accounts mixed up. I mean, it's kind of easy to do. I'm sorry, but it is. You know?
Oh, for sure.
So, anyway, Mike, is there anything else that you want to add to this? Because, I mean, to be continued, I'm sure you're going to keep digging. And
I'm requesting more files, and I got a real interesting one that really it's going to take time to write about, because I got to look into a lot of stuff to make it meaningful to people. But
hey, you know, if you're actually going to make that trip to Lancer this year, because we talked about it and you said you might do it, if you're going to do, maybe this could be your presentation right here. You know, by the time we get there,
you might be right.
I mean, that would be.
I'll tell you what it's about off the air.
Mm. All right. Well, look, I was thinking, but you know, you might have a much better idea. Matter of fact, you probably have a better idea. But I was just thinking this could be a perfect presentation for you, because I'd love to see you put this stuff up on you know, on the slides there, you know, the PowerPoint or whatever.
And yeah, you might be right. You might be right. You might, because honestly, like, this requires a lot of research, and I'm not going to be able to do an article about this in the next couple of weeks, and it'd be something
right. But if you put
sharing
it,
in that format,
yeah. And if you put it together, I mean, look, there's plenty of time in between now and then. You got at least 6 months to have it ready before you know. So, I mean, in the next 6 months, I'm sure you could track down a great many other things, and who knows, maybe you'll find a tape. I mean, that's a possibility. Maybe you'll find a tape, a transcript, or maybe you'll find where somebody sourced something from, and you'll get an idea what happened with this, you know. Because why is somebody keeping this? You called it a diary, I think, on the other show, but more accurately, it's like a calendar. And what the hell is going on with this thing if it doesn't match what you have in the record? Of course, like you said, it could be just simply that the recording was never made. But if it was never made, why? I don't know. It's very odd to me. So who knows? Maybe something was disappeared. Maybe something was disappeared inadvertently.
Well, I believe either it was never made or it was disappeared. It's one or the other.
Right. But, you know, I allow for the other thing where just, you know, look, I've run tapes before where there's a problem, especially on those old recordings. If you don't have your tape lined up correctly, it doesn't record right. You know, stuff like that. Something gets misspooled or you got a defective tape. I've had defective tapes before. You know, the reel-to-reel especially, but in the cassettes even, right, where you end up with a defective tape. That's why we always tested them first. I don't know. You know, you ever listen to the if you ever listen to the unexpurgated tapes and stuff of even like the HSCA, right, there's always a guy who goes on, okay, we're going to check and see if this works first. Well, it's not like the machine is new. They're testing it just to make sure they don't have a defective tape or some problem. You know, so, and that happened on occasion, and it's possible that could have happened with LBJ's taping, you know, system. Just saying, it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's a likely one. I'm just saying it is a possibility. And these other things are also likely that somebody said, ooh, we don't want this to exist. And maybe it got disappeared on purpose. And it could have been Johnson, or it could have been somebody who was thinking outside of Johnson's boxes. You know, you don't know. But you keep digging on it, and we might discover that, indeed, there are gaps in the record that were intentionally made. So I think that's definitely worth it. And always it's worth it for you to go over to WallStreetWindow.com, check out Mike's site over there. Again, it's not just about Wall Street. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. And I highly recommend, you know, The War State. Mike's written several books, including a history of Danville, Virginia, and stuff like that. But, you know, I recommend Why the Vietnam War. I'm going to probably recommend the next two volumes. I'm sure I will, because it's Mike writing them about that conflict and, of course, the war state. So, Mike, anything you want to add on your way out the door, sir?
Oh, thanks for having me, and we'll be back soon.
As always, Mike, it's great to have you on. Meanwhile, the Ocelli Effect might be done. I'm going to take a look at something else while I go to break here real fast, and maybe I'll add a little something to this podcast, maybe not. So let the outro play, and you'll see it as we go. Next week in this slot, we'll have Larry Hancock. Mike, are you coming back next week?
I won't be here next week, but after that, I'll be here for about a month, every single week.
Excellent. Well, look, we'll skip you next week, but we'll bring you back on the following week, and whenever we can get you, it's always a pleasure. Okay. Thank you, sir. Anyway, guys, like I say all the time, I'm merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination
book into her claims? Go to Amazon.com, enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
For as little as $50 a month, you can buy an ad for your business, podcast, book, or any message you want heard on one or more of the Ocelli.com shows. To find out more, contact ads@Ocelli.com. That's ads@Ocelli.com. Be heard with us. Revelation through conversation. Ocelli.com.
So a quick extra third segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight. Just want to go back over these LBJ tapes because I swear I had heard, something in this very similar conversation occurring with FBI Director Hoover and LBJ. Now, according to the LBJ Library, this is on the 25th of November 1963. And this is around 10:30 a.m. Now, is it possible that this is mismarked somehow? That is another thing I didn't bring up to Mike, is if you have something that is just, mislabeled. Could this be the conversation from the 23rd? Could someone have transposed a handwritten 3 into a 5? Is it possible? Let's see what we can learn by taking a listen to this. And I got this from the LBJ Library. So let's see what they have to say here, and I hope you guys can hear this pretty well. I'm going to kill my mic completely, so all you guys hear is this tape, but let's see, how long is it? It's only around 3 minutes long, the whole thing. There might be a lot of noise, and it might be really crappy sounding recording, but let's see what we can do with it. And let me also see if I can get the volume all the way up as high as I can. Yeah, okay, the volume's up. So I'm going to play this, and this is purported to be by the LBJ Library, recorded on the 25th of November,
1963. Mr. Hoover on 2383. Mr. Hoover, 2383.
383. The fourth. Two things. Apparently some lawyer in justice is lobbying with the Post because That's where the suggestion came from for this presidential commission, which we think would be very bad. Put it right in the White House, and we can't be checking up on every shooting spree in the country. But they've gone to the Post now to get them an editorial, and the Post is calling up saying they're going to run an editorial if we don't do things. Now, we're going to do two things, and I want you to know about one. We believe that the way to handle this is, as we said yesterday, your suggestion that you put every facility at your command and make a full report to the Attorney General, and then they make it available to the country in whatever form may seem desirable, as well as President. Second, believe the state, it's a state matter, too, and the state Attorney General is young and able and prudent and very cooperative with you. Yes. He's going to run a court of inquiry, which is provided for by state law, and he's going to have associated with him the most outstanding jurors in the country, but he's a good conservative fella. Yes. And we don't start invading local jurisdictions that way, and he understands what you're doing, and he's for it. I want you to understand what he was doing, and he's very strong for it. He's going to announce it today. Now, if you get too many cooks messing with the broth, it'd mess it up. And I think that these two are trained organizations. Yes. And the Attorney General of the state holds courts of inquiries every time a law is violated. Yes. And the Justice and the FBI makes these investigations. So I want you to know that, and you'll tell your press man that that's what's happening, and they can expect Wagner Carr, the Attorney General of Texas, to make an announcement this morning.
Yes.
Of a state inquiry, and that you can offer him your full cooperation, and vice versa, he'll do it with you.
Right. We'll both work together.
And any influence you got with the Post, to have them point out to them that you don't want too many things, and that just picking out a Tom Jury lawyer from New York and sending him down on new facts, this commission thing, Mr. Herbert Hoover tried that, and sometimes a commission that's not trained hurts more than helps.
It's a regular circus, then.
That's right.
Because it'll be covered by TV and everything.
Just like an investigating committee.
Exactly. I don't have much influence with the Post because I frankly
I know that.
I do it like a daily worker.
You told me that once before.
But
I just want your people to know the facts, yeah. And your people can say that, and that kind of negates it, you see.
Yes.
Thank you.
We'll take care of that.
Thank
you, Mr. President.
Okay, so that's an interesting piece. Geez, let me turn my mic down. There we go. Okay, so that's an interesting piece from the
between President Johnson.
That's an interesting piece from the 25th, right, of November 1963. Now, there's another piece here from the 29th, and I think I'm going to play that as well. And they started. I got the little narrator, which tells me about which tape it is and all that kind of good stuff. And I'm going to kill my mic again. It might be a little low again, guys. Sorry. I'll crank it up so you guys can hear it. And you can judge for yourself. Maybe this is another piece, but I know one of these pieces definitely related this whole incident about, you know, listen, I want you to run the commission and whatnot, and, you know, were there any shots fired at me and this kind of thing. So, anyway, let's see if maybe I'm transposing these audios in my own mind. All right, and I'll just let the narrator continue and kill my mic again.
And FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover on November 29, 1963 at 1:40 p.m.
Yes?
J. Edgar Hoover on 2192.
Are you familiar with this proposed group that they're trying to put together on this study of your report and other things, two from the House, two from the Senate, somebody in the court? A couple of outsiders.
No, I haven't heard of that. I've seen the reports on this on the Senate investigating committee that they've been talking about.
Yeah, well, we think if we don't have, I want to get by just with deer filing your report.
I think it would be very, very bad to have a rash of investigations.
Well, the only way we can stop them is probably to appoint a high level one to evaluate your report.
Yeah.
And put somebody that's pretty good on it from that I can select out of the government and tell the House and Senate not to go ahead with the investigation.
Yes.
Because we get up there and get a bunch of television going, and I thought it'd be bad.
It'd be a three-ring circus.
Yep. What do you think about Allen Dulles?
I think he would be a good man.
What do you think about John McCloy?
I'm not as enthusiastic about McCloy. I knew him back in the Patterson, when Patterson's down here, the secretary thing. He's a good man, but I'm not so certain as to the matter of the publicity that he might seek on it.
Mm-hmm. What about General Nordstrom?
A good man.
I guess Boggs has started in the House. I thought maybe I might try to get Boggs and Jerry Ford in the House, maybe try to get Dick Russell and maybe Cooper in the Senate.
Yes, I think so.
I don't know. You know anything, any reason? Just talking to me and you're going to talk like brothers.
Yeah,
no, brother is. Any reason, any there? I thought Russell could kind of look after the general situation and see that the states and their relations.
Russell would be an excellent man.
And I thought Cooper might look after the liberal group.
That?
Cooper from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, Cooper.
So they wouldn't think that he's a pretty judicious fellow,
yeah.
But he's a pretty liberal fellow.
Yes.
I wouldn't want Javits or some of those folks on it.
Javits plays the front page
over there. Cooper's kind of a border state.
Yes.
It's not the south, it's not the north.
That's right.
Do you know Ford from Michigan?
I know of him, but I don't know him. I saw him on TV the other night for the first time. He handled himself well on that.
You know Boggs?
I know Boggs.
He's kind of off of the resolution. That's
yeah,
what I know.
Yes, yes, I know him.
Now, Walter tells me, Walter Jenkins, that, that you've designated Deke to work with us like you did on the Hill.
I have, yes.
I tell you, I sure appreciate that. I didn't ask for it because I knew you knew how to run your business better than anybody else, and I just want to tell you, though, that we consider him as high class as you do, and it's a mighty gracious thing to do, and we'd be mighty happy. And we salute you for knowing how to pick good men.
Well, that's mighty nice of you, Mr. President, indeed. We hope to have this thing wrapped up today, but we probably won't get it before the first of the week. This angle in Mexico is giving us a great deal of trouble because the stories I have, this man, Oswald, getting $6,500 from the Cuban embassy. And then coming back to this country with it. We're not able to prove that fact, but the information was that he was there on the 18th of September in Mexico City, and we are able to prove conclusively he was in New Orleans that day. Now then they changed the date, the story came in changing the date to the 28th of September, and he was in Mexico City on the 28th. Now the Mexican police have again arrested this woman, Duran, who's a member of the Cuban embassy, and will hold her for two or three more days. And we're going to confront her with the original informant who saw the money pass, so he says, and we're also going to put the lie detector test on him. Meantime, of course, Castro's hollering his head off.
Can you pay attention to those lie detector tests?
I would not pay 100% attention to them. All that they are is a psychological asset in an investigation. I wouldn't want to be a part to sending a man to the chair on a lie detector. For instance, we have found many cases where we've used them and in a bank where there's been embezzlement, and a person will confess before the lie detector test is finished. They're more or less fearful of the fact that the lie detector test will show them guilty. Psychologically, there's that advantage, because it's a misnomer to call it a lie detector, because what it really is, it's the evaluation of the chart that is made by this machine, and that evaluation is made by a human being, and any human being can be apt to make a wrong interpretation. So I would not myself go on that alone. If, on the other hand, if this fellow Oswald had lived and had taken the lie detector test and it had shown definitely that he had done these various things, together with the evidence that we very definitely have, it would have just added that much more strength to it. There's no question but that he is the man now, with the fingerprints and things that we have. This fellow Rubenstein down there, he has offered to take the lie detector test, but his lawyer has got to be cross-consulted first, and I doubt whether the lawyer will allow him. He's one of these criminal lawyers from the West Coast, and somewhat like an Edward Bennett Williams type, and almost as much of a shyster.
Have you got any relationship between the two yet?
Between Rubenstein?
Yeah.
No, at the present time, we have not. There was a story down there that...
Was he ever in his bar and stuff like that?
There was a story that this fellow had been in this nightclub, this strip tease joint that he has, but that has not been able to be confirmed. Now, this fellow Rubenstein is a very shady character, has a bad record, street brawler, fighter, and that sort of thing. And in the place in Dallas, if a fellow came in there and couldn't pay his bill completely, Rubenstein would beat the very devil out of him and throw him out of the place. He was that kind of a fella. He didn't drink, didn't smoke, boasted about that. He is what I would put in the category one of these egomaniacs. He likes to be in the limelight. He knew all the police in that white light district where the joints are in there. And he also let them come in, see the show, get food and get liquor and so forth. That's how I think he got into police headquarters, because they accepted him as kind of a police character hanging around police headquarters. And for that reason, raised no question. Of course, they never made any moves as the pictures show, even when they saw him approaching this fella and got up right to him and pressed his pistol against Oswald's stomach. Neither of the police officers on either side made any moves to push him away or to grab him. It wasn't until after the gun was fired that they then moved. Now, of course, that is not the highest degree of efficiency, so to say. Secondly, the chief of police admits that he moved him in the morning as a convenience and at the request of the motion picture people who wanted to have daylight. He should have moved him at night, but he didn't. And, those derelictions in that phase. But so far as tying Rubenstein and Oswald together, we haven't as yet done so. There have been a number of stories come in. We've tied Oswald into the Civil Liberties Union in New York, membership into that, and then, of course, into this this Cuban Fair Play Commission committee, which was pro-Castro and dominated by communism and financed to some extent by the Castro government.
How many shots were fired?
Three.
Any of them fired at me?
No.
All
three at the president, and we have them. Two of the shots fired at the president were splinted, but they had characteristics on them so that our ballistic expert was able to prove that they were fired by this gun. The third shot, which hit the president, he was hit by the first and the third. The second shot hit the governor. The third shot is a complete bullet that wasn't shattered, and that rolled out of the president's head. It tore a large part of the president's head off. And in trying to massage his heart at the hospital, on the way to the hospital, they apparently loosened that, and that fell onto the stretcher. And we recovered that. And we have that. And we have the gun here also.
Were they aiming at the president?
They were aiming directly at the president. There's no question about that. This telescopic lens, which I've looked through, it brings a person as close to you as if they were sitting right beside you. And we also have tested the fact that you could fire, those three shots were fired within 3 seconds. There have been some stories going around in the papers and so forth that that must have been more than one man, but because no one man could fire those shots in the time that they were fired. We've disproved that by the actual test that we've made.
How did it happen? They hit Connally.
Connally turned to the president when the first shot was fired. And I think in that turning, it was where he got hit.
If he hadn't turned, he probably wouldn't have got hit.
I think that's very likely.
Well, the president got hit the second one?
No, the president wasn't hit with the second one.
If Connally hadn't been in his way.
Oh, yes. The president no doubt would have been hit.
He'd been hit three times.
He'd been hit three times. You know, on the fifth floor of that building where we found the gun and the wrapping paper in which the gun was wrapped, and upon which we find the full fingerprints of this man Oswald, on that floor we found the three empty shells that had been fired and one shell that had not been fired. In other words, there were four shells apparently, and he had fired three but didn't fire the fourth one. He then threw the gun aside and came down, and at the entrance of the building he was stopped by a police officer, and some manager in the building told the police officer, "Well, he's all right, he works safe, he can you needn't hold him." So they let him go. That's how he got out. And then he got on a bus. The bus driver has identified him and went out to his home and got hold of a jacket that he wanted for some purpose and came back downtown, walking downtown, and police officer who was killed stopped him, not knowing who he was and not knowing whether he was the man, but they were just on suspicion, and he fired, of course, and killed the police officer. Then he walked
about. You can prove that.
Oh yes, we can prove that. Then he walked about another two blocks, and went to the theater. And the woman at the theater window selling the tickets, she was so suspicious the way he was acting, and she said he was carrying a gun. He had a revolver at that time, with which he had killed the police officer. He went into the theater, and then she notified the police and our man down there went in there and located this particular man. We had quite a struggle with him. He fought like a regular lion, and he had to be subdued, of course. And his brother was then brought out and, of course, taken to the police headquarters. But he apparently had come down the five flights of steps, Sarway, from the fifth floor. So far as we found out, the elevator was not used, although he could have used it, but nobody remembers whether it was or whether it wasn't.
Well, your conclusion is, A, he's the one that did it. B, the man he's after was the president. C, he would hit him three times except the government turned.
I think that's correct.
Four, that there's no connection between he and Ruby that you can detect now. And five, whether he was connected with the Cuban operation with money you were trying to...
That's what we're trying to nail down now. Because he was strongly pro-Castro. He was strongly anti-American. And he had been in correspondence, which we have, with the Soviet embassy here in Washington, and with the American Civil Liberties Union, and with this committee for fair play to Cuba. We have copies of the correspondence. So we've got him nailed down in his contact with them. None of those letters, however, dealt with any indication of violence or contemplated assassination. They were dealing with the matter of a visa for his wife to go back to Russia. Now, there's one angle of this thing that I'm hopeful to get some word on today. This woman, his wife, had been very hostile. She would not cooperate. She speaks Russian and Russian only. She did say to us yesterday down there that if we could give her assurance that she would be allowed to remain in this country, she might cooperate. I told our agents down there to give her that assurance that she could stay in this country, and I sent a Russian-speaking agent into Dallas last night to interview her, so that we've got her now, and whether she knows anything or talks anything, I don't know, won't know.
Where did he work in the building? On the same floor?
He had access on all floors.
But where was his office?
Well, he didn't have any particular office. Orders came in for certain books, and some books would be on the first floor, second floor, third floor, and so forth.
But he didn't have any particular place he stationed?
No, he had no particular place that he was stationed at all. He was just a general packer of the requisitions that came in for school books from the Dallas schools there. And therefore, he had access, perfectly proper access, to the fifth floor and to the sixth floor. Usually, most of the employees were down on lower floors.
Did anybody hear, see him on the fifth floor?
Yes, he was seen on the fifth floor by one of the workmen there before the assassination took place. He was seen there. So that we've got...
Did you get a picture of him shooting?
No. There was no picture taken of him shooting.
What was this picture that fella sold for $25?
That was a picture taken of the parade and showing Mrs. Kennedy climbing out of the back seat. You see, there was no Secret Service man standing on the back of the car. Mm-hmm. Usually, the presidential car in the past has had steps on the back next to the bumpers, and there have usually been one on either side standing on those steps at the back bumper. Mm-hmm. Whether the president asked that not be done, we don't know. And the bubble top was not up, but the bubble top wasn't worth a damn anyway because it made entirely of plastic. Mm-hmm. And much to my surprise, the Secret Service do not have any armored cars.
Do you have a bulletproof car?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes,
I ought to have one?
I think you most certainly should have one. Most certainly should. Because I have one here. We have one in New York. We use it for different purposes. I use it here for myself. And if we have any raids to make or have to surround a place where anybody's hidden in, we use the bulletproof car on that. Because you can bulletproof the entire car, including the glass. But it means that the top has to remain up. You can never let the top down. It's a regular limiting type. And it looks exactly like any other car, but I do think you ought to have a bulletproof car. And but I was surprised the other day when I made inquiry. All that I understand the Secret Service has had two cars with metal plates underneath the car to take care of a hand grenade or a bomb that might be thrown out and roll along the street. Well, of course, we don't do those things in this country. In Europe, that's the way they assassinate the heads of state with bombs. They've been after General de Gaulle, you know, with that sort of thing. But in this country, all of our assassinations have been with guns. And for that reason, I think very definitely I was very much surprised when I learned that this bubble top thing was not bulletproof in any respect, and that the plastic the top to it was down. Of course, the president had insisted upon that so that he could stand up and wave to the crowd. Now, it seems to me that the president ought to always be in a bulletproof car. It certainly would prevent anything like this ever happening again. It doesn't mean you could have 1,000 Secret Service men on guard and still a sniper can snipe you from up in the window if you are exposed like the president was. But he can't do it if you have a solid top, bulletproof top to it, as it should be.
You mean I ride around my ranch, I ought to be in a bulletproof car?
Well, I would certainly think so, Mr. President. It seems to me that car down at your ranch there, the little car that we rode around in when I was down there, I think that ought to be bulletproof. I think it ought to be done very quietly. There's a concern that is out, I think, in Cincinnati, where we have our cars bulletproof. I think we've got four. We've got one on the West Coast, one in New York, and one here. And I think it can be done quietly without any publicity being given to it or any pictures being taken of it if it's handled properly. But I think you ought to have, because on that ranch there, it's perfectly easy for somebody to get onto the ranch.
I think those entrances all ought to be guarded, though, don't you?
Well, I think by all means. I think you've got to recognize, you've got to really almost be in the capacity of a so-called prisoner. Because without that security, anything can be done. Now, we've got a lot of letters and phone calls over the last 3 or 4 or 5 days. We got one about this parade the other day, that they were going to try to kill you then. And I talked with the Attorney General about it. I was very much opposed to that marching to the White House.
Well, we Secret Service has told them not to, but the family felt otherwise.
Well, that's what Bobby told me, because when I heard of it, I talked with the Secret Service, and they were very much opposed to it. I was very much opposed to it, because it was even worse than down there at Dallas. You
yes,
were
yes,
walking down the center of the street.
I think that's right.
Dallas, you were.
The center of the street. I think that's right.
And somebody on the sidewalk could dash out. I noticed even on Pennsylvania Avenue here, I viewed the procession coming back from the Capitol, and while they had police signs along the curbstone, looking at the crowd, when the parade came along, the police turned around and looked at the parade, which was the worst thing to do. They also had a line of soldiers, but they were looking at the parade.
Well, I'm going to take every precaution I can, and I want to talk to you, and I wish you'd put down your thoughts on that a little bit, because you're more than the head of the Federal Bureau, as far as I'm concerned. You're my brother and personal friend,
well,
and you have been for 25, 30 years.
You just been having your time.
Absolutely not.
So you just, I got more confidence.
Absolutely not.
Your judgment, anybody in town. So you just put out some of the
judgment,
things you think ought to happen, and I won't involve your court here, get you in jurisdictional disputes or anything. But I'd like to at least advocate them as my opinion.
I'll be very glad to, indeed. I certainly appreciate your confidence.
Well, thank you.
Fine, President.
So there you have it. The full conversation by the LBJ Library. That's from the 29th. That second one I played, which was much longer than the one from the 25th. But in that one, if you heard, he said, you know, the fifth floor, and he also said that no, none of the bullets were aimed at you. this is sort of a repeat of that conversation, seems to me. And they're still talking about this parading of having him go in the middle of the street, which is clearly about the funeral. And all that, and of course, interesting stuff there about the different arrangements and so on and so forth. They keep saying the fifth floor. I think it's because they said that he had to have gone down five flights of steps in order to get to the bottom instead of six. I think that's what the deal is. But anyway, there you have it. So maybe I transposed some of that stuff, and I was thinking that that conversation occurred earlier. And there you go. Now you've heard it for yourself, and there's a lot to dig into. So that's all there is to it. And this has just been a little extra segment for the Ocelli Effect tonight, and I want to thank Mike Swanson again for showing up and talking about his recent article and his continued work regarding the tapes and what's going on with the LBJ Library. Okay. Anyway, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
Like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.